Hello, and welcome to Sekahan. Today, Putin's first visit to the disputed Kuril Islands, and why Japan's northern territories never came back 80 years on. On August 13, 2026, Vladimir Putin set foot on Iturup, the island Japan calls Itarofu, part of its northern territories. In 26 years in power, he had never visited the disputed islands. This was the first time. What he toured was striking: a fish processing plant, where he tasted caviar, then a hospital and a school, telling residents the place was, quote, like a resort. The visit came as the finale of a large military exercise, more than 13,000 troops and some 60 ships across the Sea of Japan and the Sea of Okhotsk. Japan protested sharply, calling the four islands its inherent territory, historically and under international law. Here are the three questions I want to ask. 1. Why caviar in schools, not a tour of military bases? 2. Why have these islands never come back, 80 years after the war? 3. If they are ceasing to be a bargaining chip at all, what is left for Japan? I will come back to all three at the end of the video. First, what actually happened? Let's fix the facts first. Putin had never entered the disputed islands since taking office in 2000, not even as prime minister. As head of state, he is only the second to go, after President Medvedev visited Kunashir in 2010. It was not spontaneous. In January 2024, he said he would, quote, definitely go. On the island, when the governor recalled the Soviet defeat of Japanese forces in 1945, Putin replied, don't forget it. Russians, he said, carry the genetic code of victors. Words that tie the island to the story of victory in World War II. Japan's response came the same day. Foreign Minister Motegi protested strongly, calling the four islands Japan's inherent territory, historically and under international law. That evening, the Russian ambassador was summoned to the foreign ministry. When Russia's prime minister visited the same island in 2021, the summons came from a vice minister. This time, the foreign minister handled it personally, one level up. Prime Minister Takaichi called the visit absolutely unacceptable and said it wounds the feelings of the Japanese people. Tokyo had asked Moscow repeatedly since 2024 not to make the trip. The prime minister was informed it was happening that afternoon. Some history. Because Japan's claim starts with a border that was drawn by treaty, not by war. The first Russo-Japanese border, in 1855, ran north of Itarofu. The four islands in dispute today were on the Japanese side. In 1875, Japan traded Sakhalin for the rest of the Kuril chain, 18 islands, all north of the four. The four were never part of any exchange. In Japan's telling, these islands were Japanese from the very first treaty, not spoils of any war. The line moved in 1945. Soviet forces landed on the northern Kurils 3 days after Japan's surrender and moved south to occupy all four islands. About 17,000 Japanese residents lived there. By 1948, those who remained had been expelled. So why has this argument gone nowhere for 80 years? Partly because the two sides are not even using the same rulebook. Japan's position, the Kuril Islands that renounced in the 1951 San Francisco Peace Treaty, do not include the four, and the Soviet Union never even signed that treaty. Russia's starting point is the Yalta Agreement of 1945, where the Allies promised the Kurils to Stalin for entering the war, the outcome of World War II, fixed and final. Japan replies that it was never a party to Yalta, and a deal among other leaders cannot transfer territory. Two claims, built on different documents from the very start. That mismatch is one reason the argument has never truly connected. Here is what most people outside Japan don't know. A deal came close, twice. In 1956, the Soviet Union agreed to hand over the two smaller islands, Habomai and Shikotan, once a peace treaty was signed. Then in 1960, angered by the revised U.S.-Japan Security Treaty, Moscow piled on a new condition, all foreign troops out of Japan. The two-island deal was shelved, effectively killed by the U.S.-Japan alliance. This second chance came in 2018. Abe and Putin agreed to accelerate talks on the basis of the 56 Declaration, a realistic two-island track. That door closed too. Russia's 2020 constitutional amendment banned ceding territory, and after invading Ukraine in 2022, Moscow refused to continue treaty talks at all. The first window was closed by the alliance, the second by the war in Ukraine. Putin's first visit to the Kurils made the front page of r/world news, and the thread turned into an argument about 1945 itself. The blunt take came first. Japan joined a world war and lost territory to the victors. That's the whole story. The pushback was immediate. The Soviets took the islands after the first atomic bomb fell, grabbing land at the moment of surrender from a country they had barely fought. Not everyone calls that a clean story. And the counter to that, Stalin promised the Allies he would enter the war 3 months after Germany fell, and he did, to the day. 80 years on, the original grab is still being litigated in the comments. The same thread spent as much time reading Putin's motive. "Domestic muscle flexing," one wrote. "Remember when we beat Japan? Russia is strong." A simple question rose to the top. "Wait, so World War II technically isn't over?" "Basically," came the reply, "the same shape as the Korean War, an armistice that never became a peace." And then the sharpest reading. The big thing is that the man who made ceding territory illegal just cemented Russia's possession in person. Hold that last one. It connects directly to the analysis. Now the analysis. Question 2, why have the islands never come back? The key is that the four islands are not one package. There are islands Russia could give away, and islands it can't. Habomai and Shikotan sit just off Japan's Nomuro coast. Itorofu and Kunashir sit across the entrance to the Sea of Okhotsk. During the Cold War, of the entire Kuril chain, the Soviet army garrisoned only these two islands. Today they host a division of roughly 3,500 troops, anti-ship missiles, and fighter jets. Notice the pattern. The two islands the Soviets agreed to hand over in 56 are exactly the two outside the wall. Islands you can give without breaching the wall, and islands whose loss breaks it. So what does that wall protect? A structure known as the bastion. The Sea of Okhotsk is where Russia's Pacific Fleet operates its ballistic missile submarines, the sea-based leg of its nuclear deterrent. The concept: fortify the waters near home, and let the strategic submarines hide inside. The Kuril chain is the outer wall of that sanctuary. The buildup is real. Anti-ship missiles in 2016, fighter jets in 2018, long-range air defense in 2020. But there is a crack in the story. That air defense system reportedly left both islands in 2023, likely diverted to Ukraine. If the islands are too vital to give up, why pull the air defense? The question stands. Though the anti-ship missiles guarding the straits stayed, the core of the wall is intact. But the military story should not be the last word. Yu Koizumi, a leading Japanese expert on the Russian military, argues the causation is backwards. It's not that the islands are too strategic to return, it's that Russia has no intention of returning them and plays up the strategy to justify it. Meanwhile, one Russian worry has stayed constant for 66 years, visible in the 1960 memorandum, not Japan itself, but what gets stationed on the islands after a handover. The 2018 question, would U.S. forces come to a returned island, has become. Would a returned island become part of the alliance's hardware? Security logic or domestic politics? The readings differ, but they agree on the present. Under the current regime, there is no visible intent to use these islands as a bargaining chip at all. Back to question 1. Why caviar? Because showing ordinary administration is a stronger statement than showing an exercise. March through a military base with flags, and you admit the place is special. Contested. Tour a hospital, taste the local caviar, call it a resort, and the message is the opposite. This is just an ordinary Russian region. Where daily life keeps piling up, the word negotiation drifts further away. Why now? In July, the two foreign ministers had spoken for the first time since the invasion, so one reading is that Moscow answered a diplomatic opening by naming its price. The other reading, a trip announced back in 2024, simply happened on schedule. There is no evidence either way. Both readings carry equal weight. One distinction matters here. Under international law, strengthening your control of a territory after a dispute arises does not strengthen your legal title to it. So what is advancing is not legal consolidation, it is a political fait accompli growing heavier each year. That distinction cuts both ways. Legally, nothing has moved. That fact endures. Politically, the ground hardens every year. That reality endures too. Grounds for resignation or grounds for hope, depending on which half you hold. Back to the three questions. 1. Why caviar? Because ordinary life on camera declares nothing is disputed here, more forcefully than any military parade. 2. Why 80 years? Different legal rulebooks from the start, the Okhotsk Bastion's wall, and now Russia's own constitution banning the very act of handing land back. 3. What's left if the islands stop being a bargaining chip? For Japan, the question has quietly changed shape. From when will they return, to what do we keep on the record? Here is what that means. Keeping something is not the same as recovering it. Japan's protests change nothing on the ground, but in territorial disputes, silence can be cited as acquiescence. So the identical statement, issued every time, is the work of keeping the record alive. Invisible effect is not the same as no meaning. The constraint that does bind is human. 4,830 former island residents remain, average age 90, a race against time. And some things have not moved at all. The line drawn in 1855 and the promise recorded in 1956 remain on the books. What do you pass on about land that may never come back? Keeping that record alive is the work this dispute leaves behind. The full article covers the negotiation history and the complete Reddit threads. The link is in the description. Thanks for watching.